You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO. We're proud of their work and glad that they can partner with us. You can find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. The CUW logo you'll find in the sponsors section. Check it out, Concordia University, Wisconsin. Every once in a while, we have an opportunity to check in with some of our missionaries who serve abroad, serving the Lord in different places around the world. It's my pleasure today to sit down and visit with the Reverend Leif Haskarl, serving the Lord in the Cayman Islands. Leif, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. Thanks for spending some time reconnecting with us here back in the States and sharing about your work and how the Lord is using you to bring his good news to those in the Cayman Islands. Now, when I have to say, when that opportunity to serve in the Cayman Islands came up, I'm sure it was a real difficult decision, huh, to have to go to the islands.
Well, it actually is. I mean, anytime you receive a divine call, it's something you have to very prayerfully and seriously meditate upon what God's will is for you and your ministry. And it was a very, you have to look at the fact that you're either going to be one place or the other, and someone's going to be disappointed and someone else is going to be excited. But most of all, are you where God wants you to be?
Well, if it's on an island in a tropical destination, that sounds really, we all really feel for you.
Well, it certainly is a beautiful place. Wonderful people are there. But no matter where you are, it's God's people that you're serving, and that more than the location matters.
Most certainly. Most certainly. Well, tell me a little bit about the Haskarl family and your preparations to go and serve the Lord in the Cayman Islands.
Okay. Well, I'm a native Texan and grew up mostly in Oklahoma, graduated from college there, and served time as an Army officer for about 11 years, and then left the Army and went to the Fort Wayne Seminary, graduated there in 97, and was called to the Texas Panhandle to serve Zion in Pampa. And I was there for 6 years and then was called to Central Texas to serve a large dual parish at St. James in Lexington and Holy Trinity of Fedor. And I served there until 2014 when I was called by the OIM to be a missionary. I had considered when I was at the seminary the possibility of doing missionary work, but just didn't feel that my personal circumstances and everything was a fit at that point. But with 14 years down the road, things have changed. Mm-hmm. And as the Lord will, he saw fit to prepare me and call me in to serve his work in the Cayman Islands.
Tell me about your family. When did you meet your wife?
Yeah, my wife, Nancy. We met in the military. She was an Army officer also. And so she was with me as we transitioned from the military into the ministry. As a matter of fact, she was the first one to actively suggest that I should consider going to the seminary, because she knew that I had thought about that back when I was a young man. And she's been my backbone and support throughout our whole marriage. We just celebrated 29 years of being married and looking forward to a nice 30th anniversary celebration to come.
Well, congratulations. Now, when did you all, what did Nancy think when you started talking about this opportunity to serve as a missionary, an international missionary?
Well, it actually started with someone in South Korea had nominated me to serve as a missionary there. And when that first, that was a very big surprise to me. Certainly wasn't anything I was expecting. I was content where I was in Texas and all. And that kind of spun both of our heads. That was a real turning moment, if you will. And then as things developed, my name was also submitted to the congregation in Grand Cayman, and I was notified of that. And then I was really kind of turned upside down. But in all things, it's whatever the Lord's will was. And so, but it was quite a surprise to us. It certainly wasn't. Everybody asked, how did you end up there? And I honestly say, it was God. It wasn't something you go out and pursue or anything like that.
It wasn't that you went on a cruise and then you forgot to get back on the ship, right?
No, never.
I'll just do some ministry here.
I wasn't even sure. I knew the Cayman Islands were in the Caribbean, but I couldn't have even told you which end of the Caribbean they were. So, yeah. And I didn't even know we had a congregation in the Cayman Islands.
Precisely. So. I remember when I first started learning about your work there, when you were first sent, and learning about the work there. Tell me a little bit about the history of the Lord's work in the Cayman Islands and the presence of the Lutheran Church there.
Yeah. Well, obviously, we know there's been Lutherans in the Cayman Islands for from a variety of sources for a long time. There's been some Lutherans come in from Cuba. There's been other people who've come in like snowbirds or have immigrated from Canada and so forth. But there never was an organization. There never was a congregation until about 2001. And a group of them got together and said it would be nice if we could have worship services as Lutherans. And that was the start of the congregation there.
Tell me a little bit about who makes up the population and the community there where this congregation is now.
Now, there's four major groups of people, and you could break this down a lot of different ways, but there's the Caymanians. There's a large number of visaed expatriate workers who are on the island. There's the seasonal residents who might be there anywhere from a couple of weeks to 6 months. And then there's the tourists that are there from a day to a couple mm-hmm. of weeks. Those are the four, as I identify it, the four groups. And you can break that out in several different ways.
So with this diversity among the people there, how do you serve this diverse group of people? How do you bring the word of God into their community and connect with them, engage them?
That is the challenge. I mean, we have people there from at least 135 different nationalities, and a lot of those are the visaed workers, many of them connected to the financial services and banking industry that's there. And how to connect with them, you know, it almost always comes down to a one-on-one contact. Somebody knows somebody who invites somebody. And in that way, it's really not that different than evangelism work you do anywhere else. But it's equipping your people to talk to people that they know, that they work with, associate with, and invite them to church. Tell them about what's going on, what Lutherans are. And the more comfortable your members are with doing that, the better the response is to that.
You mentioned the banking industry there. What is unique about that? Why is there such a financial hub there in the Cayman Islands?
There's a longstanding law that in the Cayman Islands there is no income tax, and so if you, as I understand it, and I'm not an expert in this, but if money is being held there for you or invested through there, there's no income tax paid on that money. And so that has created a favorable banking environment. And we're the third largest banking center in the world. And it's considerable, the amount of money that goes in and out of that island. But it's important to note that money doesn't belong to the Caymanians. Many people think, well, if all that money's there, all the Caymanians must be rich. I will guarantee you that is not the case.
Because there's no tax, I assume there's no tax then locally
right.
on that as well then.
Yeah.
What have you learned about the Caymanians then, since you've been there? What have you learned about the local people who are not they're on visas?
Well, they're wonderful people. They're very pleasant. They're very soft-spoken and polite. They're a joy to be around. They're very sincere in their Christian faith, and there's a lot of Christianity on the island, they show a tremendous amount of respect toward Christianity in all things, even more so than you would expect here in the United States. And so they're very open about talking about it. So, for instance, they'll see me and they'll say, "So what church are you?" And I will tell them, "Oh, I'm with Safe Harbor Lutheran Church." And they go, "So what's a Lutheran?" Because they don't know.
Sure. But you spend a lot of time, I'm sure, explaining what a Lutheran is.
But it's a great point of engagement to talk to them and, you know, proclaim the gospel and invite them to come and see and hear and learn more. And they're open to hearing all that. They're not going to cut you off. They really want to explore that. And they will ask much deeper spiritual questions than you would normally expect to be asked. So you have to be prepared to answer.
So it sounds like this is a real favorable environment for this mission.
I believe it is a very favorable. I mean, I think the only thing that limits us are the hours in the day and the amount of contact we can make. And we're doing some initiatives to increase the amount of contact, especially we're shifting our focus to more and more on the Caymanians. And we're finding some avenues to do that we think are going to bear some real fruit for us.
What impact, if any, does the tourism industry have on your work as a missionary there and the community where you serve?
Well, the tourism industry is the second largest industry on the island next to the banking. And we do a lot of contact work with the hotels and the resorts to inform them of where we are, where we're meeting and when and so forth. And we get a large number of people who are what we call drop-in Sunday worshipers who come in, and some find out about us from our website, some find out through the concierge. But and then people will call us up, and if they know me, I've had people call me up and say, "Hey, I'm coming in for a day on a cruise ship. What do you suggest?" And I'll try to meet them down at the cruise ship terminal and either point them in the right direction of things to do, or if I've got the time, I'll actually take them to some of those places.
That was my next question. How many folks contact you? How frequently do you get an email or a message saying, we're on a cruise, we'll be there in a couple of weeks or something like that. We're heading there this summer, this spring. And
I would say probably one a month.
Really?
Yeah. You know, it might be one person or I think I've jammed seven in my car before. So, but you know, we're always happy to show them the island, and they see more of the real island instead of just the tourist destinations. And
so. Precisely. Now, how have you adjusted to life in this new culture? You mentioned driving on the island. If I remember correctly, this is a whole other side of the road, right?
Literally, it is. When I first arrived there, as a matter of fact, I was telling people this Sunday when I was preaching it in the sermon, I was like, I walked to the car that they were loaning me to use, and I opened the driver's door, and somebody had stolen the steering wheel. No, they hadn't. It was on the other side of the car. And then I learned that I had to drive on the other side of the road. That takes some adaptation. It changes everything. And the Caymanian people are good about it because there's so many visitors there. They kind of look out for that, but then the problem comes after you get used to that. And then, like now, I come back to the States. I have to remember that I've got to drive on, again, the other side of the road. So
it's common among several missionaries who come back to the States, I hear. Now, how has your family adjusted to life in the islands? How has your wife and your son now in college, right?
Yeah, when we got the call to go down there, it was the very end of his junior year. And we gave Chris the opportunity and left it up to him that he could stay in Texas with some of our friends and family and finish his senior year of high school there, or he could accompany us. But if he accompanied us, he had to finish his whole senior year before we deployed, because it wasn't possible to get him into the private school section down there. He chose to go with us, to the surprise of a lot of people. And so he spent his junior, senior summer doing all his senior classwork online, and got that done, and came down there, spent that that first year with us, and then came back and walked with his graduating class, and that was a big moment for him.
Wow.
And so then he went on and he's enrolled at Concordia, Texas. He's doing education and history right now. Kind of waiting to see how that plays out, which way he's going to go with that. But he's in his second year there now.
So you're empty nesters.
We're empty nesters now.
Missionaries in the Cayman Islands. And how has Nancy adjusted to life on the island?
She really likes the pace of life there. And as the Lord will, about the time Chris was preparing to depart the nest, he opened up a job opportunity for her at one of the private schools. So she's working in the administration side of the school there. And it's ideally suited for her skills and such. And so I think that's been a big help, not only as far as helping us defray Chris's college expense, but also we don't have the time to think about
being empty nesters
yep. all of a sudden. So, and we've been blessed. I mean, Chris has come back, spent the summer with us, and then my daughter was down with her husband last Christmas. So it's been good, you know, and we're enjoying that.
Well, thanks be to God that that life is going well. One of my favorite questions of missionaries, the cuisine. What's the local cuisine like?
Wow, now that's a tough one. Because it is such a crossroads, mm-hmm. you can find just about everything except true Texas barbecue. And that's because we don't have any hardwood to do barbecue with. You can grill, but to do true barbecue. But yeah, so you get a flavor of the world there. Everything you can get. Italian, Thai, Jamaican jerk is real popular. A lot of seafood dishes, needless to say.
Is there anything that's specific to Caymanians?
There are a couple the historic dishes are not seen so much anymore. They like turtle, but turtle's fairly rare because it's a very controlled item. But to me, it's more the fruits and vegetables, the mangoes and the June plums. And they have a drink called soursop. And it looks like a thinned milk, but it has a wonderful flavor. But it's fairly rare to find, but it's very good. We love it when we get it.
Soursop. How would you describe the taste?
It's not as sour as it sounds, but it's got a very unique taste. Not sweet, not sour. It's more on the sour side, but it just has a flavor I can't match it up with anything. I've never tasted anything like it before. So,
well, I'm glad that you're learning about and enjoying life in the Cayman Islands. For those of us wanting to know more about what's going on with the mission there, you mentioned you're trying to move more of your energy and efforts toward reaching the local people rather than those who are more temporary or visiting.
Mm-hmm.
What does a typical week look like for a missionary in the Cayman Islands? What is a typical week? What does a Sunday look like?
Well, let's start with Monday morning. Monday morning for me, I usually go out to the prison and I spend the morning out there leading a Bible study, which is supposed to last an hour, but usually ends up about 2.5 hours because the men really enjoy dialoguing about the Bible and so forth. And I enjoy the interaction with them. And so that takes up most of Monday morning. Then I'm kind of regimented in this. Monday afternoon, I go and I look at what are the upcoming lessons for the following Sunday. So I start turning those over in my mind, maybe start developing a little mental checklist of things perhaps I want to do for the sermon. I generally take Tuesdays as my day off, and then Wednesday, sermon, bulletin, getting ready for Wednesday evening Bible class or services, depending on the time of the year. Thursday, finish up with that, and then start looking at going down to the open air farmers market or one of the other places where I can find people congregating and visiting with them and ministry opportunities of that nature around, mainly around Georgetown and West Bay.
Now, what does a Lutheran missionary wear what's the climate like there?
It's a tropical climate.
Yeah.
Right now, the lows are around 82. The highs are around 94. Heat index of around 116. But when you're out doing missionary work there, and I've tried various things. The thing that connects the most is to wear a clerical, but not a black clerical.
I was going to say, how can you wear a black clerical in a tropical climate? That's going to be a little hot.
You can, but the deal is, I found that if I wear a blue one, they instantly identify me as a minister. But they know that I'm not the Roman Catholic priest or the Episcopalian. And so they'll ask me, they say, what church are you with? And I'll say, well, I'm a Lutheran. And they'll say, what is a Lutheran? And off we go. Mm-hmm. Beautiful entry into a chance to dialogue with them and explain more. So I found that in that particular setting, wearing a blue clerical is an opening for an evangelism opportunity.
How many colors did you have to go through before you figured that out?
Actually, that was my first, other than black.
Oh, okay.
So, because I specifically said, okay, don't want this or that. Blue is something nobody else is wearing. Let's try that.
So you just hang out in, go and visit, you said, in places where people are congregating, the open-air farmer's market and places like that, just for a chance to meet people, to connect with people,
right,
and talk.
Yeah, another place is up at Kamana Bay. You can run into your visa'd expatriate workers up there a lot. So it depends where you're wanting mm-hmm. to focus that day as to where you go. And it's taken some time to learn that. I'm still looking for some others so that I can contact other people in different ways. So.
Now, is this the only congregation on the island or in the area? What's the closest neighboring congregation or someone to fill in for you if you need someone to preach for you?
Wow, that's a good... it would probably be from Kingston, Jamaica would be the next closest congregation.
Now, if you need a Sunday off, I'm sure you just put a message out on Facebook and ask what preachers would like to come to the Cayman Islands to preach for you, right?
I've had a lot of offers. Even had one this morning. So, yeah, it is. It's a beautiful place, and to come and visit and so forth. There are some adjustments as you have to make anywhere. You mentioned driving on the other side of the road.
Sure.
You've got to be prepared to handle the heat mm-hmm. and got to be smart about just exposure to heat, drinking lots of fluids and watching the sunburns. So, yeah.
Yeah. You don't look too tan today. So you seem pretty cautious about that.
I actually am very careful about the sun because I've had in my life some exposure to the sun that resulted in a few instances of skin cancer. So, mm-hmm. If I go out, I put on a pretty good coat of sunblock because it only takes a few minutes down there.
Sure. Yeah. The closer you are to the equator, the closer you are to the sun, the faster you burn.
The dermatologists do a good business down there.
I'm certain. So. Yeah. Well, I have enjoyed our conversation, learning about how the Lord is using you to bring that good news of Jesus to the people in the Cayman Islands. And we can certainly learn more about you on lcms.org and the work that you're doing there. Is that a good place to find out more about the mission there?
We also have a website that if you go and search for Safe Harbor Lutheran Church in the Cayman Islands, you can find us there. And I also I have a Facebook, so if people want to track me on Facebook, they can get in touch with me that way also.
And if traveling, anybody taking a cruise or visiting the Cayman Islands, what time are services on Sunday?
10 o'clock Sunday morning at the South Sound Community Center. And we start on island time, which means we should start at 10, but we're probably going to start closer to 10:15. So
good to know. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today and sharing about the Lord's work in the Cayman Islands.
Well, thank you. My pleasure to be here with you.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
If you shop at Moleskin, you might want to reconsider. It specializes in notebooks, diaries, journals, bags, and reading accessories related to travel. According to its website, their philosophy is world culture, travel, and personal identity, unless you're pro-life or a Christian. Moleskin refused to print the logo of Texas Right to Life on notebook covers, saying it was too controversial. They also discriminate against all religious groups and churches by refusing to do business with them. However, they brag about supporting the Global Fund, which promotes abortion around the world. The Moleskin website claims they're an apolitical company, all the while doing printing that supports controversial political issues like global warming and sexual health. One more example of corporate intolerance and hypocrisy.
Follow us on Twitter at Life Issues USA and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson with an invitation for you to join me over the weekday noon hour for Moments of Assurance, your lunchtime spiritual recipe. You'll enjoy encouraging scriptures, a bit of Bible history and trivia, news items, humor, the kids' corner, and more, all mixed in with faith-strengthening sacred music. A blend just right for your midday hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance over the weekday noontime hour here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
You can't know where you're going unless you know where you've been. And it's even more critical when it comes to the history of God's redeeming grace in Christ. That's the conviction of Concordia Historical Institute, the Department of Archives and History of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. For almost 90 years, we've been dedicated to collecting, cataloging, and showcasing the historical touchstones of Christ's grace and mercy in the life of the Lutheran Church. Help us in the fight against historical amnesia by becoming a member of CHI today. Benefits of CHI membership include our quarterly journal, newsletter, and discounts when you use CHI's research and reference services. You also receive the joy of knowing you're doing your part in preserving and proclaiming Lutheran history for generations to come. Moving Lutheran history forward together. Check us out at ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org. ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org.
Listening to Worldwide KFUO on the go with your smartphone doesn't mean you have to walk around with earbuds all day. You can Bluetooth across the room to a speaker system in your home or listen on radios that have built-in smartphone cradles. There are many easy ways to listen to WorldwideKFUO.org on the air, online, and on demand. We proclaim the clear gospel message of Christ crucified for our sins. The messenger of good news, Worldwide KFUO.
Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Joining me by phone today, Janis Diakons. He's with Lutherans for Life of Latvia. Janis, welcome to the program.
Welcome.
Thank you for being my guest. Janis, tell me a little bit about your involvement with Lutherans for Life. How did you get involved with this organization?
I was very interested in those reproductive health issues already before I was Christian. So I was really looking all those materials and reading all those pro-abortion groups said about this. And when I became a Christian, I just discovered what abortion is. And it was very hard, and I was really weeping about what's happening in abortion. And I really tried to find some Christian organizations who talk about abortion, who talk about what the Christianity says about abortion, but I couldn't find any Lutheran organization there. And so I was reading many other organizations' materials. And then I remember that I saw one small advertisement in church newspaper when local missionaries from East European Mission Network asked to some people to join them in Lutherans for Life in Latvia. So I just emailed them and said I really, really would like to be on a team. And then it started. I started to attend conferences because I just discovered that there are some conferences I could attend. I didn't know this before this.
Tell me about the presence of Lutheran in Latvia. Is it a large church body?
Yeah, I think it's considered large church body. We have something about less than 300 churches, 300 congregations, and something about more than 40,000 members in our church. And it's considered a large church body in Latvia.
How are Lutherans regarded in Latvia? How do most people think of the Lutheran Church, those who are not Christians, or maybe how do other Christian churches regard the Lutherans in Latvia?
Oh, it would be hard to tell when you are so long inside of the Lutheran Church. I think they see it mostly as really a conservative church, and the church that doesn't give up to the liberal things, and the church that stands for life and stands for family. And some don't like it, some like it, but I think they see it as a really conservative church.
Is there, in Latvian culture, is there a prevailing worldview or ethos? What is the most common worldview among Latvians, whether it's in the church or outside of the church?
I think you can get a lot of worldviews there because We live in a time where we have changed our system or politics for many times. We lived under the Soviet time, so there are generations who experienced only Soviet time. Then there is a change of times again, and we are independent country again. And then comes in everything from the West, and so you can get a lot of worldviews there, and it's mixed actually.
Are there things about Latvian culture that you think perhaps the rest of the world doesn't understand or misconceptions about Latvian culture?
It's hard to tell. I think the thing you have to understand is what comes with the post-Soviet country in general. You have to understand the Soviet lifestyle to understand how Latvians think. Mm-hmm. What they think, and then there is a big gap between this old generation that comes from Soviet times and new generation that doesn't want to know anything about Soviet times. And you just have to understand those things that happened before, and then you can really understand how Latvians think.
Can you give me an example of something that you think is a result of that Soviet influence in Latvian culture?
I think certainly it is abortion. It's abortion that thinking that you can solve your problems with abortion, that abortion is nothing special. You can do it and live your life, and that's normal. I think that certainly comes from Soviet times. And it's still there.
Where have you seen changes in that worldview? It sounds like that Soviet influence has set the standard for this ethos that abortion is a solution. Where have you seen changes, and what has brought about changes to that worldview?
I think there are many things that have happened. When the Soviet Union fell, there was many publications in the media and other in television, and so they were against abortion. They were pro-life. So they said how bad is abortion, and it was open. Now there are some pro-life Christian organizations who have done many things. There are, they have did advertisement and many other things just to inform society about what abortion does and how wrong it is and how life how precious life is. And so we see constant drop in abortion numbers every year.
So do you think that there is an increase in the regard for the sanctity of life among Latvians?
I hope so. I hope so that it is. There is an increase in use of contraception too. That's why you don't rely completely on the statistics actually. But I think after those last years when there was many activities from pro-life organizations actually, I think that's increased because it got out on the media. They saw this, and I think many of people actually thinking differently now.
So there's been a strong pro-life influence that is certainly making an impact on Latvian culture,
especially in last years.
So certainly, when it comes to the issue of abortion and the sanctity of life, what about end of life issues? What about those who are ill or aging in the last years or months of their lives? How are they regarded in Latvian culture?
I think there are again two sides of it. There is this old Soviet style of thinking that they have no value at all, somehow. And then you put them in the special houses and they die there. But we don't have euthanasia now. We just, you can hear some discussion starting about it, but we still don't have it now.
What role does the family hold in Latvian culture? You know, looking at American culture, it seems that our regard for what we might call the traditional family, husband and wife and children, is diminishing, and redefining marriage has become common in the United States. What role does family have in Latvian culture, and how is it regarded?
If I look in a large scale, I would put Latvia in a more conservative end of Western part of the Europe, and if you compare it to America, it will be more conservative, because we still have in our constitution that only men and women can be a marriage between man and woman. And I think in the most part of Latvians' thinking, it is like that. But there is a great pressure from those liberal side, so that they always try to change those laws and get those homosexual marriages in, but they have not succeeded yet. So we are protecting our marriage, trying to fight for it, and it's still there, and we are still more conservative now.
Do you think that those influences, that pressure to change a definition of marriage and to broaden that definition of marriage, does that come from within Latvia, or is that an external force, an external pressure?
I think in Latvia you always feel external pressures. That it was always been like that. You feel external pressure from liberal Western organizations. You feel some, but those. We try to protect our marriage, and that's our inner thing to do. The problem is that during the Soviet times, and especially in early Soviet times, many families were destroyed. Family members were deported to concentration camps and killed, and all the families are really wounded. So we don't have many families with deep traditions and deep family heritage. And so we have to somehow deal with that and heal this side. And now comes the second front from the homosexual movement, from the liberal, and they try to redefine marriage, redefine family, and now we have to fight on two fronts. So it's quite hard, but we are trying to do it.
What would you say are some of the main efforts of Lutherans for Life of Latvia?
We have done, I think, 12 conferences, one conference a year on different pro-life issues. We tried to cover all the things, starting from abortion and end-of-life issues and family and fatherhood. And so there was one conference every year. And that was the main thing we did. In those last years, we have tried to produce some materials. So you can take some brochure and give to your pastor for him to be easier to talk about pro-life issues, and some booklets about family, about abortion, about healing after abortion. So now we work more in on this material side, just to so everyone can read it.
And how were those attended? How were those conferences received, and the topics, the material that was delivered at those? How were those received by Latvians?
The first conferences were attended very well, because it was the time when the people came to the church very much. So after the Soviet Union fall, many came to the church, and it was like coming back to home for many people. But now the church attendance is not so great anymore, and conferences are not attended so much too. And that's why we try to work more with those materials, to get them out in the congregations, to get them to the pastors, and so that this message of life reaches them somehow more than with the conference. Because I was, the conferences were happening for many years before I was in Lutherans for Life, and I never heard of them. So I think there has to be done more than conference alone.
Have you faced public opposition? Are there organizations that publicly oppose you, or that where you found outward opposition?
We have one organization in Latvia, mostly who works who supports abortion. And it's in some way connected to the Planned Parenthood Federation, and so we have a lot of they are against pro-life issues everywhere, mostly in politics, mostly in the legislation. So if you try to change something in legislation to the pro-life side, you will always get their opposition there.
How has your partnership with Lutherans for Life in the United States developed?
I think it started with the Pastor Don Richman, who is international representative for Lutherans for Life, when he came to Latvia. I remember that I met him in one of the conferences, and it has been a really, really great help for us, right, in those, we just take and translate those Lutherans for Life materials from English to Latvian. And so as long as we don't have a pastor in a special position who can think about those things, write about those things, that's a great help, actually. We can take those materials, translate them, and we can have our own website with those materials. And I think that's a great help, and that's a wonderful partnership there.
So there are certainly some benefits to that partnership. Any other benefits that you see from the partnership with Lutherans for Life in the United States or in other countries?
I have been to some other Lutherans for Life conferences or something like this. I've been to Russia together with Don Richman to speak about pro-life issues, and I've been to Czech Republic to speak about pro-life issues. So I think for me it has been a great experience in seeing how other countries do it, and I hope to see more here in the United States, how it's done here.
You'll be presenting at the upcoming Lutherans for Life conference in the United States here October 21st and 22nd in Bloomington, Minnesota. What will you be presenting on at the conference?
I will tell a little bit about how we are, about Lutherans for Life in Latvia, what the history is, how it started, why it started, and what we have done until now, what is our experience with this work, and what we are doing now, and what is the point where we are now, and how can we develop this even more. I hope this, I will give a short presentation about Lutherans for Life in Latvia.
What do you think, what do you hope participants will leave the conference with? What do you hope the participants who attend your session will gain from that session?
I hope they will gain the same thing I have discovered in Lutherans for Life, actually, because what I discovered is it's a way how to proclaim gospel to those who have been wounded by abortion. It's a way how to speak truth in love to the mothers who have lost their children in abortion. And I think that's the most valuable thing that Lutherans for Life have, and that's my great discovery there. And I hope that I will be able somehow to help them to take it home even more than they have now.
Jonas, what do you think is the what do you think are some of the biggest challenges we as Lutherans, particularly Lutherans for Life, face in the coming years? What are some of the bigger challenges you think that we'll be facing?
I think there are a lot of those family issues coming in, and abortion. I think those if abortion is more and more and more pressed by the liberal movement, and if it's paid by the government, which I have seen that they try to make it happen like that, I think we will face more abortions. And we will have more work to be done then. And the second thing is, I think always a challenge to somehow speak with the pastors and to help them speak about pro-life issues, because one organization cannot do it. So every pastor in his congregation have to speak about life issues, have to know what's going on and how to speak about abortion, how to speak about pro-life and defend life in his congregation. Yeah, that's the biggest challenge, actually, always.
What are you looking forward to most about the upcoming Lutherans for Life conference here in the United States in Minnesota?
I think that it would be great to finally meet all those people I have seen on the videos of Lutherans for Life and have some good conversations and have some exchange of experience. That would be great.
Anything you hope to take with you? Anything you hope to learn or gain or take with you back to Latvia?
Yeah, I think that experience and that contact with those people I haven't seen, mm-hmm. but we have exchanged some emails, and I hope to see them, to see how the pro-life work is done here, and I hope I can use some of it in Latvia.
Well, certainly partnering with us here in the United States, we're grateful for that partnership and glad that you are here to be a part of the conference. Are there other areas of the world where you hope to make connections in the future to connect with other Lutherans and pro-life organizations that perhaps those relationships have not been forged yet?
I usually went where I was invited. So I was invited in Russia. I hope I can go there sometime more there, and I was invited in Czech Republic. I hope I will be able to go there. I have good contacts there, so I'm always open to some new invitations, and I'm ready to go where I will be invited.
During your visit here for the Lutherans for Life conference, anything else you hope to do to see while you're here in the United States?
Yeah, I'm trying to see how the Lutheran congregations live here. Mm-hmm. What is usual life of the everyday Lutheran congregation in the States? And that's interesting to see, and that's what I try to actually see most here.
Very good. Well, I pray that the conference is a good experience for you. Blessings on your presentation, and thank you for representing Lutherans for Life of Latvia at the Lutherans for Life conference here in Minnesota. It's been a privilege to talk with you today, and God's blessings on all you do.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. Jonas Diakons, Lutherans for Life of Latvia. Before we go, Jonas, how can we find out more about Lutherans for Life of Latvia?
I think the best way would be to go to Lutherans for Life webpage and to find the international section. And there you can find a link to our webpage because it's in Latvian and it will be hard to tell you here.
Very good. Jānis Diakons, Lutherans for Life of Latvia. Thank you for being my guest today.
Yeah, thank you.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at kfuo.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.